Our guest this hour says our 20th century government is no match for our 21st century problems. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, December the 16th. And we are happy to welcome back Don Kettle this hour. Don Kettle was a former political science professor at UW-Madison, well-known in Wisconsin for chairing many state commissions, including one on reinventing government. We'll talk a little bit about that. But Don Kettle also has a new book out. It's called The Next Government of the United States, Why Our Institutions Fail Us and How to Fix Them. And we will welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Don Kettle, a public policy expert, is now a professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's so good to be with you again.
Yes, it's good to have you back in Wisconsin via the radio. So what's wrong with government as we know it?
The real problem is that, in a nutshell, the government that we have is not a very good fit for the problems we're trying to solve. You look just as one little example of this. About 2 months ago, the Federal Reserve, just on a Tuesday night at a time when nobody's really paying that much attention, went out and bought us all a nice insurance company.
Yeah.
The American International Group is now something that the federal government owns a majority stake in, and I don't think I've been actually talking to people in Washington. I haven't found anybody who could explain to me or to any of us what that means. I mean, what does it mean to own an insurance company? What is it that we're going to do? Does it mean that all of us get to go to the annual meeting and we sit around the pool drinking Mai Tais at the expense of the company? Who's going to go to the board meetings? Who's going to make the call? How long are we going to own this thing, and what are we going to do with it? And that in microcosm, if you look at that, the discussions over the auto companies, the issues over the banks, we've got ourselves an increasing complex of really difficult problems that just don't fit the way we used to think about what government is and what it does and how best to go about doing it.
Well, is the problem that our government in this financial crisis has ponied up all this money to nationalize these industries to a certain extent?
Well, that's part of it. Part of it is how much money we're spending. But part of it, and this is a much deeper kind of issue, is the way that we are expecting government to exercise its authority on behalf of and over all of us in the process. It's in part the question of the meltdown, but it's also part of a much broader transformation of what's going on in government and what government does. It's the question of what we do with the Medicaid program that is increasingly covering the long-term care costs for our seniors, where in many places the government just doesn't have very much of a role at all in doing anything except paying the bills. It has to do with the great difficulty we had in trying to recover from Hurricane Katrina. You start looking around time after time after time after time, we keep stumbling into these big problems where we want government to try to solve them, but where we don't have institutions that are very good at figuring out how to do that both well and cheaply and effectively.
Yeah.
Without creating incredible amounts of fodder for the producers of 60 Minutes, who give us a chance to be able to look more and more at, can you believe the government did that to us yet again?
Well, is this in part... you say that some of the problem is that no one's really in charge.
And that's the thing. If you think about this, go back to Hurricane Katrina. Everybody said, this is just horrendous. We should make sure that this never happens again. Well, what is it that happened that we want to try to prevent? Well, we had 9/11. Everybody said we got to make sure that when we have another event of some kind we need to respond to, that we're in place. We reorganized the government to try to make that happen. We created a new FEMA inside the Department of Homeland Security. Everybody said they were ready. We even had warnings a year in advance about what would happen if a major hurricane hit in New Orleans. And what happened was that we were caught absolutely flat-footed. Michael Brown, the guy that President Bush went down and said was doing a heck of a job and then turned around and fired a few days later, was the only guy who lost his job in the process. But it's pretty clear that the entire system broke down in the process. The real problem is that nobody was in charge. Nobody was really in charge of coordinating or managing or directing or controlling. And so as a result of that, the government that we needed to have and the response that we all wanted just didn't happen because nobody was in charge of making it happen.
Yeah, you talk a lot about Katrina in the book. And in fact, you wrote a book about the response to Katrina,
right,
if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely.
And how it failed so miserably. You also, though, compare the Katrina response to the care that your mother-in-law, Mildred, received when she needed to be put in a nursing home due to her Alzheimer's.
Right.
You're more positive with government's response in that situation?
Yeah, and that's a case where it worked fairly well. I mean, this was an amazing story. My mother-in-law died about almost 2 years ago now, and for the last couple of years of her life, she was on medical assistance. She was the widow of an Air Force colonel who had served his country. Actually, in World War II, had flown almost 50 missions in B-17 bombers out of the United Kingdom at a time when most people didn't make it through 25 missions. He went on to have a long career in the Air Force, retired, had a military pension, but by the time he died and they ended up trying to support her and her needs, there simply wasn't enough money to cover the $85,000 a year that nursing home care costs, which is what she needed given the increasing problems that she had, so she had to go on medical assistance. And in the entire time, from the first moment where she applied for the program to the last breath that she took, she never encountered a government employee in the entire care system that she had. So one of the fastest growing programs in the entire federal government, in the budgets of most states, and here is a situation where all of her care depended on whether or not the entire complex system worked without anybody being in charge of making it happen. Now, the good thing that happened is that there were a lot of very smart people along the way who made good decisions about the care that she needed, but it was a situation and a system that was held together by the instincts and the training and the skills of people who figured out how to work across all these different boundaries of nursing homes, of hospitals, of doctors, physicians, and pharmacists, and healthcare workers, respiration therapists, recreational people, and a whole variety of other people who together made the quality of her life good. And so it was the ability to weave all these different parts of the system together that in the end ensured the high quality of her care. What was interesting here was, if you think about it, that's the same kind of problem that we had with Hurricane Katrina, just on an individual personal scale, but multiplied millions of times over for all the people in nursing homes. Here's a case where it worked very well for her, didn't work very well for Katrina. It's the same problem, and it's a clue to both the core issues we have with government and what it's going to take to try to make it work better.
Yeah, so was Mildred lucky, fortunate, or is there a model here for how government should be operating in a program using the Medicaid example?
Well, first of all, I think she was lucky. She was lucky because she was surrounded by people who loved her and people who took good care of her and professionals who had very good instincts about how to try to go about this. There are people in nursing homes who are not, but the basic model is one of what I describe in the book of kind of rocket science government. Everybody says that, this isn't rocket science, where rocket science is understood and defined as something just much too complicated for any mere mortal to possibly ever understand. But the reality is, if you look at how rocket scientists launch rockets, they sit, think about what it is they're trying to do, focus on the objectives and the missions that they're trying to accomplish. They bring together all the pieces of the puzzle that they need to make sure that that happens. They find a way for all the pieces to work in coordinated fashion, to work effectively together, and they hold themselves accountable not for checking it off the boxes, but for making sure that rockets fly. And that's precisely what it is that the professionals involved in Mildred's care did. I mean, they were rocket scientists, and the problem is that the initial stages of the response to Katrina was being run by people who didn't understand rocket science. So the good news is, and this is truly good and hopeful news, we know how to do this. We know how to make government work effectively. The challenge is trying to find a way to make sure that it works as effectively as we all want it to, as often as we need it to. And that's the big challenge of what I describe in the book as the next government of the United States.
Okay, so you've been asked to teach a class in rocket science government for the Barack Obama administration on January 21st. What are you going to tell them to do? What would be the lesson?
Well, the big lesson, I think, is that, first of all, that management matters. And you've really got to keep your eye on the ball and make sure that what you want to have happen actually does happen. You go back and look at the story of the Bush administration, the one thing that the Bush administration was never able to recover from was the catastrophic response to Hurricane Katrina. The administration survived the mission accomplished banner. It survived the ups and downs of what happened with the war in Iraq. It survived lots of things. But the one thing it could not recover from was its fumbled response to the hurricane. And if you look back at the public opinion polls, the evidence is really instructive here. So the evidence, first, is that you really have to pay attention to what you're trying to do and make sure that you make the results matter, because if you don't, it'll turn around and just eat you right up.
Yeah.
The second thing is that increasingly we're dealing with problems that don't fit neatly inside any individual agency. One of the real paradoxes of the increasing complexity of government is that there isn't a single problem that matters that any one government agency can control. And so you've got to pay attention to not only managing programs well, but making sure that all the people who've got a piece of the action work in a coordinated fashion together to make things work. I mean, that's how rocket scientists work, and that's how government has to as well. The last thing is you have to make sure that what matters in the end is whether the problems get solved. I mean, you can't focus purely on simply checking off boxes, following the rules, going by existing procedures, because if you do, you end up checking off all the boxes but not getting the problem solved. Yeah. We've got to redefine accountability to mean solving the problems that citizens want to get solved. We do that. We do those three basic things, and the Obama administration will be a success. If it fails to do that, we'll be coming back and talking about some of the same kinds of things that end up eating up the Bush administration, and that's the kind of thing that the Obama administration just cannot afford to have happen.
We are talking with Don Kettle. He is a professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania, formerly with the UW-Madison, and he is the author of several books. His latest, The Next Government of the United States, Why Our Institutions Fail Us and How to Fix Them. We welcome your questions for him. How would you fix the next government of the United States? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's Talk of the Nation. More than 500,000 jobs vanished last month, the worst in 34 years. It's a tough time to hunt for a job, but after one on Talk of the Nation, some advice. Your life in a recession on the job hunt, coming up after one on Talk of the Nation. Right now, we're talking with Don Kettle. He is a professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania and the author of The Next Government of the United States, Why Our Institutions Fail Us and How to Fix Them. Professor Kettle, before we go to the phones, promotion for Talk of the Nation just reminded me that we are in a recession. The Obama administration is going to be taking office during a global financial crisis. Two wars are going on. Massive problems facing the country, the world, and President-elect Barack Obama. Is the Obama administration going to be able to make the changes needed to deal with these problems?
They can. I think they have the basic instincts about this. The biggest mistake that they can make is to try to solve these problems by using strategies and tactics that are focused on the past. In the whole long course of American history, especially over the last 150 years or so, we've gone through periodic changes where there are times of really deep and wrenching division and change from the past. We had that during the New Deal, in fact, starting in 1933. And what's interesting is about every 20 to 28 years or so, for about the last 150 years, we've gone through a fundamental, really, truly sweeping change in the way in which we do governance in this country, starting with the progressives in particular. And if you look at that cycle, you could trace it back through the progressives and then the super progressives that followed them, and then the New Deal after that, the era of Eisenhower through Jimmy Carter, and then the Reagan Revolution through Bush and Clinton, and now George W. Bush, we are now at the point where we are at another one of those critical historical change points. And so, like it or not, he claimed he was the candidate of change. He didn't realize how right he was. What we need is a government that fundamentally changes the way it does what it does, just as it's done in the past. If he succeeds in finding a way to do that, he can be a success. If he continues to try to approach government as we have for the last 20 years, he's going to be doomed to failure. And that's one of the fundamental lessons that history teaches us from this last 150 years of history that we've gone through.
Yeah, so in lay terms, Professor Kettle, are the changes you're calling for, are you talking about privatizing more or less?
I guess what I'm suggesting is not privatizing more or less, but understanding how best that government can exercise a responsibility that only government can play. There's a lot of stuff we just expect government to do. And just as there are no atheists in foxholes, we're in a situation where, given the problems we face, we can't think about tossing government out as well. What we need is a government that's much smarter and equipped to be able to handle what we're doing. I don't think we're going to privatize less. We may even, in fact, governmentalize more. What we're going to be doing, though, is creating more and more complex mixed systems that require this very complex interconnection between government, the private sector, state and local governments, nonprofits, the international community, too. I mean, who would have thought that we'd be in a position where everybody would look up over their shoulder to see what happened in the Asian stock markets to have an idea of whether or not the president was going to have a good day or a bad day? The real key is trying to figure out how the government can steer itself through the system that is increasingly interconnected. We're long past the point where thinking about, let's turn this over to the private sector, let's bring it back into government, even makes sense in the conversation. All these systems are so interconnected at this point, just as the situation with my mother-in-law Mildred or with the effort to try to respond to Hurricane Katrina, that the only sensible way to run a government is to find a way to get some effective leverage over these complex systems we've created.
Let's talk about something pretty complex. I know, so you're calling for something like a public-private partnership.
Right.
And let's use Barack Obama's proposed economic stimulus package for the states maybe as an example. How might this work under your new government system in terms of, all this money coming to states to perhaps do road projects and help beef up the economy?
Well, I mean, first of all, it understands that the only way to get the economy moving is, in fact, to do it through that kind of a partnership. The federal government can't do it itself. It has to understand that what we need to do is to build these partnerships in ways that will focus everybody's attention on the problem we're trying to solve. And here are the challenges, both getting the money out the door quickly, getting it spent well, on the other hand. So we have to have some sense about how we're going to try to create and leverage these partnerships with the private sector to get the money spent. I mean, we know that unless we're very careful, we're going to be creating opportunities for waste, fraud, and abuse, and we have to design in from the very beginning a very effective system to try to make sure we can at least keep our eye on the money so that we're not ending up having everybody say later on, we spent our money on what? Yeah. But then beyond that, we have to pay attention to what kind of effect that we're going to have and that we want to have on the country as a whole. I mean, what government, what society, what kind of life do we want to create as a result of this process? And in the end, what we need to do is to focus not just on let's find a way to spend $500 billion in a big hurry, but to spend a little bit of time thinking about what kind of new society we want to create in the process. Because at every stage where we've gone through these big transformations, they've all been driven a bit by a vision as well about where we want to go. And we've got to have somebody behind the steering wheel to be able to take us where we want to go instead of having everybody fight and jerking the wheel back and forth without really taking us in any direction at all.
Our guest is Don Kettle. He is the author of The Next Government of the United States, Why Our Institutions Fail Us and How to Fix Them. And our first caller is Jim in Watertown. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yeah, we've got to confront this mad dog problem. And it is capitalism. I can't see that you people can't see that. It's got to be relegated to the ash can, and it's got to be kicked to the curb. All right, for all time.
Jim calls in frequently, and he doesn't think capitalism is a good system. Is it our government or capitalism, Don Kettle?
It's a bit of both, I mean, to tell you the truth. The basic rule, the basic policy, the basic mistake, if you think back over how we slid into this current financial mess that we have, is that too many people took out loans they couldn't pay back. I mean, that's the basic lesson of the story is you want to try to avoid this sort of thing. Don't do that anymore. And that was a failure in part of capitalism. It was also a failure in part about government regulation. And my basic point, I think, is not to suggest that it's a problem that we can solve either by saying, well, we're just going to turn it over to the private sector or turn it back over to government. It's got to be a process, simply has to be a process, that involves an effort to try to solve all these problems, that we've got to think about this as a partnership in which people need to find ways of working effectively together, as opposed to simply saying we're going to turn it over to one or the other. The problem is that any time in the past when we thought about this as a boundary question, to just find a nice shoebox to fit these problems into, we've ended up paying a severe price for it.
Next, we go to Roberta in East Troy. Hi, Roberta. You're on the air.
Hi, Professor Kettle. I guess I wasn't totally sure of the direction you were going with this conversation. I got a little bit concerned when you were talking about your mother-in-law and the fact that she, you know, moved pretty smoothly from one care facility to the next, from the hospital to the nursing home, and got good care, and that there wasn't a federal kind of government official looking down on her case, managing that. I don't think that's unusual. Both care systems are heavily regulated, and there are people from different regulatory agencies coming and looking at charts, maybe not, you know, your mother-in-law in particular, but randomly looking at charts to make sure that there is quality care being given and appropriate care, and that, you know, there is a transition. And I don't really think there needs to be somebody who's looking case whether or not this case is going well. As you said, you know, there's professionals, and in a sense they're rocket scientists. They know what they're doing, and if the system's going well, that's exactly the way it should go. So I was a little concerned about, you know, what you were saying when there wasn't any federal, you know, official sort of meeting her along the way in that process, because I don't think it really is necessary, just as the insurance company started to try to regulate and get in and manage every single case. And I think what we found, it only increased the expense of health care, and it wasn't really changing the quality of health care very much.
All right. Professor Kettle?
Roberta, you're exactly right. But if you listen to just what you said, it was a combination of the insurance companies, of regulators from both the federal and the state level. It was a combination of private physicians as well as family members. The fact is that nobody was in charge of her care, and the decisions that were made as a result of the inner workings of all of this. So it's not so much a criticism of that at all, because the quality of the care that she got was quite good. It wasn't suggesting that there wasn't a governmental role in the background, because there was. It is that the result of this process was a very, very complex system in which nobody was really fundamentally in charge or in control, where the quality of the care that she got was a result of all of these pieces interacting. And so the challenge is trying to figure out, wait, how did that work? How did it work that she got good care without any one person, any one entity, any one governmental unit being in charge? Because there are important lessons here about how we leverage these very complex systems. So the important thing here is to remember that she got good care. It was a result of a very complex interaction among federal, state, local regulators, all of us helping to pay part of the bill, a complex of hospital and physician and nursing home employees, all of whom worked together in collaboration with the family to be able to make sure that what had to happen happened. It was this rocket science process that I'm talking about. If you look at the way that rocket scientists launch rockets, it's not the case that there is a kind of hierarchy where you toss a problem in and things come out the bottom. It's a process very much like what I just described. So it's not to suggest that there weren't government officials involved. It's that nobody in particular was in charge. And that's the big lesson that we did not learn quickly enough when it came time to deal with Hurricane Katrina, where it was exactly the same kind of problem, but where government unfortunately responded far too slowly. And in the end, lots and lots of people suffered as a result. So some cases we do this pretty well, some cases we don't. And the problem is we're having more and more of these problems where we need that kind of response, And we need to find a way to make sure that that happens much more effectively, much more often.
Boy, I'm sorry to be so dense, but your mother-in-law received good care through this system of partnerships, medical community, and the federal government. Nobody really in charge. But Katrina, it seems to me we had someone in charge who couldn't do it and who didn't do a heck of a job.
Well,
and so didn't we need someone in charge?
Well, it was clearly the case that Michael Heck of a Job Brown was not doing a heck of a job. We established that. The problem is that if you go back and look at what happened, it wasn't so much the case that FEMA was in charge or should have been in charge, because it was a problem where nobody could be in charge. We needed efforts by the state government, the National Guard, local officials, the local police department, the local fire department, the mayor. We needed nonprofit organizations, private companies. In fact, one of the big heroes, if you talk to the people down there, was Walmart, which managed to get itself back in operation faster than almost anybody. We needed cell phone companies. We needed transportation systems. We needed the U.S. Department of Transportation. We needed the Coast Guard. We needed the Army. We needed the Air Force, the Navy. We needed, in fact, a complex of things. And the key to Katrina was that it was a situation where nobody was in charge. Mm-hmm. Nobody could be in charge, but nobody was in a position to be able to pull all the pieces together. And I have some sympathy for Michael Brown, because he, I think, a bit unfairly has been the lightning rod for the entire system, because what we had was a systemic breakdown. The entire system broke down, and it wasn't his job to steer the entire operation. He could have done a far better job, and what was fascinating was that the guy who succeeded him, Admiral Thad Allen from the Coast Guard, in fact did what it is that Michael Brown should have done. But he did it by understanding, Admiral Allen did it by understanding, that he wasn't in charge of the operation. His job was not to do things or to order things, it was to get things done. And he got things done by getting the different parts of this partnership to start to work together much more carefully. In some cases, by screaming or yelling or applying a boot in exactly the right place of somebody's anatomy, and in some places by just simply finding a way to hold the right meetings with the right resources and the right people and getting them rolling.
All right.
The real key here is that nobody was in charge. And if you start looking around, and this is one thing that I'd ask your callers, think about any problem that matters, that any one organization can control. And I can't think of anything. We increasingly have problems where you got to find some way of getting this leverage across many organizations. And that's the key to this leadership strategy I'm talking about.
I got it. Leah in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, Professor Kettle, I haven't read your book, but it feels like you wouldn't have had to write this book if George W. Bush hadn't been in office the last 8 years, and maybe you can give examples from before then. But it's ironic that he went to business school, and there is a concept in healthcare, and there is a concept in business, and it's called project management. And I've worked in companies where when we have a new project, all the people from all the different areas that are part of it come to meetings, they work on a vision, they work on a mission, but there's someone at the top who's competent, who's hopefully competent and in charge. And I worked in the healthcare field for many years, and the concept there is called case management. And the problem is that nobody wants to spend the money for that level, but that's exactly where parents or children or some advocate has to assume that role today, because no one else does. And I'm sure that in your mother-in-law's case, that's exactly what happened, that someone was following what was going on, and you were also, you know, fortunate to get some good professionals. But, I mean, I don't know that government is rotten. I just think the last administration put people in who are not competent to do the job and who didn't have that vision.
Thank you very much, Leah. So, it wasn't government. It was the last administration, Don Kettle?
Yeah, well, let me agree mostly but not completely with what you said, Leah. I think that the in-between part, the middle part of what you said, I think is exactly on target. It's the project management, case management stuff. It's the understanding that what we've got to do is find a way to get everybody's got a piece of the action together to make sure that the action happens. And that's exactly the right thing, and that's increasingly what they're teaching in business school. And the problem is that George W. Bush came to the White House with a kind of 1970s approach to management for a 21st century world, and it didn't prove to be a very good fit. So it's a little surprise that what we ended up getting was what we ended up getting. But on the other hand, I have a little bit of sympathy for Bush, because I think, as I suggested earlier, he found himself, for better or worse, at exactly one of these transition points that we were in the middle, are in the middle, continue to be in the middle of a fundamental change in what government is, what we expect it to do, and what society deals us as problems. And the big problem was that he just wasn't agile, didn't move fast enough to be able to adapt government to these new challenges that we face. And whoever it was who was president at that point, whoever it was, would have had precisely the same sets of problems. The real challenge would have been, and the big question always will be, whether or not, say, Al Gore would have moved any better or more effectively. But what we've seen at these points as time has gone by is that we need somebody to step up and say, look, we're at a very different point, just as Franklin Roosevelt did. And what we need now is a very different strategy for governing. What Franklin Roosevelt did at that point was what George W. Bush did not. And what we have, what Herbert Hoover did not do was what Franklin Roosevelt did do. It's understanding when you come to one of these critical points, these critical changes in history, that you need a new government that is equipped to be able to deal with the problems that we must solve. And that's the situation which Obama finds himself in now. And in many ways, he said that he's a candidate of change. He's going to have to prove it, or he's going to end up being a Herbert Hoover himself. If he finds the right path, then he can be a kind of Franklin Roosevelt candidate, a Franklin Roosevelt president. He can be the kind of transformational person, and that's the fundamental challenge that he faces.
We are talking with Don Kettle, who is a professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania, formerly of UW-Madison, author of many books. About his latest book, has just published, The Next Government of the United States, Why Our Institutions Fail Us and How to Fix Them. We welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. The Chicago Tribune files for bankruptcy, a wage freeze at the New York Times, the Detroit Free Press cuts back on delivery service, and local newspapers across the country are closing their doors. After 9, Kathleen and her guests will examine the future of print journalism. That's coming up. Right now, we're examining the future of government with our guest, who says that government needs to change, and he writes about his suggestions for that change in his new book, The Next Government of the United States, Why Our Institutions Fail Us and How to Fix Them. Don Kettle, professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania. We have an email from a listener, Bruce in Eau Claire. How would you compare the level of partisanship we've witnessed in Washington and in Wisconsin state government in recent years with historic partisanship? How does this fit into the concept of rocket science government? I guess I'm trying to see if you think that partisanship is going to get in the way of the changes you're looking for, Don Kettle.
Well, the fundamental problem here is that we have partisanship about as poisonous as we've had in a long, long time. Although it's important, I think, for us historically not to try to talk ourselves into a corner by trying to imagine that this is worse than anything we've ever had. I mean, remember that things didn't work out well for Alexander Hamilton, because he had a political dispute with Aaron Burr that cost him his life in a duel. And so at least we don't tend to solve our political problems by shooting each other in duels anymore. The real problem here is that what we've got are some really fundamental tensions. The thing I have to say, frankly, I'm still trying to struggle with is how much of the partisanship is just the kind of mean divisiveness that increasingly inflicts our political system, which is surely part of it, but how much of it is the fact that we're just really trying very hard to struggle with very hard problems, and that if we focused a little bit more on trying to figure out how to solve them, that we might very well be able to not so much diffuse partisanship. I'm no Pollyanna about that, but we might be able to at least solve these problems more effectively by focusing on how to solve them. One of the things that is very clear is that for my mother-in-law, sitting in a in a nursing home, there's not a Republican or a Democratic way about how to treat her. In when you've got people who are stuck in 20 feet of water in downtown New Orleans, there's not a Republican or Democratic way of figuring out how to rescue them. If you are a victim of a Wisconsin tornado, there's not a Republican or Democratic way of trying to put a rescue situation, a rescue relief package into place. And so if you start thinking about just the need to make government work and the need to try to make sure that what the basic things we expect government to do, that it does well, then I think we can not so much diffuse partisanship, but we can try to build a consensus on the kinds of things we know we want to do and to make things work better. And that, I think, increasingly is what we need to do. We're still going to fight like cats and dogs over the big policy issues or the big battles. Increasingly, though, I think we have to focus much more on how to make sure that the kinds of things we decide to do, we get done, because I think politically our citizens are just not going to forgive us if we can't succeed in getting that accomplished.
I remember, Don Kettle, that Wisconsin state government tapped your expertise frequently. You chaired more than one blue ribbon commission on one thing or another. The one I recall was called the Kettle Commission, and I thought it was called the Kettle Commission on Reinventing Government more than 10 years ago. Weren't you working on these issues for the state of Wisconsin's government some time ago?
I actually was. I think, if I remember, it was the Blue Ribbon Commission on the future of 21st century government, and it was a commission that Governor Tommy Thompson, in fact, had created, and his basic charge to us was to think big and come up with something creative and bold, and it was creative, it was bold, and it was also scary for people, because what it did, I think, was to try to come directly at some of these issues. I have to say that, frankly, part of the genesis of this book and the work that I've been doing for a long time on this came out of my efforts to go around the state there, talk with so many residents of Wisconsin about the problems they wanted to solve. And the basic lesson that I kept hearing over and over again was that we did not want partisanship to get in the way of getting government's problems solved, and that the way to get the government's problems solved had to be done in a way that worked across the political and the economic and the jurisdictional boundaries that so often get in our way. And those were the two big conclusions that I came away with from my work there in Wisconsin. And a lot of that, thanks, in fact, to so many conversations with so many people both in your audience and around the state, helped inform this book as I wrote it. So I think that for better or worse, the kinds of issues that I discovered there turn out to be universal, and the thing that I discovered in writing the book is every time I turned around, there they were again.
Yeah.
And so on the one hand, these are very hard problems to solve. On the other hand, we have a situation where if we don't solve them effectively, really, truly bad things happen. But on a third hand, if I had a third hand to be able to bring to it, the good news is that there are people who have figured out how to do it. And by finding a way to bring those pieces to the fore and making those solutions work effectively, people have found a way to be able to make this actually happen. So I'm hopeful about all these issues.
All right, let's get back to the phones. We have many callers. Michael in Danbury. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy and Dr. Kettle. It's nice to have this discussion. I have two things I'd like your comments on. One is, I think that your example of your mother-in-law really kind of speaks to the issue is that both the governmental and private sector have made too many promises that they will take care of the individual, when in fact it sounds like what really has happened is that your mother-in-law and the people near her found out that it was their responsibility to guide her through the resources that were available, both public and private, and that that the government and private sector needs to stop asking people not to be responsible, but to give them back their responsibility and provide resources that the individual pick and choose that they need that meet their needs. And the last comment I'd like to have you share with is that hopefully we're not, it seems to me that we might make the same mistake England has made, and that is that we need to recognize that on a planet of 6.5 billion, that we're only 300 million of that, and that the United States, as a nation who's enjoyed a very special spot on the planet for the last 75 years, is going to have to learn to accept its role as a minority nation on this planet, and that it's going to have to relinquish some of the consumption levels that it's had, like 40% of the world's resources, and others need it now. So, I'd like to hear your comment about the fact that like Lester Thoreau says, we're at a period of punctuated equilibrium. We have to have a fundamental change, and one of them is becoming a minority nation.
I'm definitely with Thoreau on this. I think, and I just can't underline it enough, that we are at one of those historic points where things, in fact, fundamentally change one way or another. And we have a set of big choices to make. We can either choose to continue what we're doing, and that includes both the kind of consumption process that we have and some of the processes that we've gone through over the last decade where we've lived beyond our means on credit that we haven't been able to pay back. And I've had friends in Europe who lately were telling me back in April, you know, would you please, and they said it very, very nicely and politely, but would you please get your economy under control, because every time you get a sniffle, we get pneumonia. Well, what's happened is that the difficulties we've had with our economy have rippled throughout the world now increasingly. Now, we're at a point where we can either choose to figure out how to position ourselves in a world where increasingly we're interdependent and where the kind of rocket science government that we have not only applies to my mother-in-law, but increasingly to the challenges of America's role in this new economic order, because it's essentially the same sets of problems of figuring out how we leverage that leadership across international boundaries, or we can continue doing what we're doing, and that will, for better or worse, doom us to second-class status. I don't think we want that. We're smart enough to be able to figure out how to avoid that, but the challenge is trying to figure out how to position ourselves for the decisions that, like it or not, we simply cannot escape.
Thank you, Michael, for the call. Larry in Madison is with us now. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm inclined to think that the partnership, as the guest has described it, is not likely to be very successful. I don't think that government personnel would be much of a match for the greed-driven partners that the guest might have them work with. I worked for Rockwell International in the Apollo program in putting a man on the moon. The government oversaw everything down to the most minute detail, and the program was a success, in my opinion, because of the government's oversight. The government was in control, and the program succeeded, but there was no partnership. I also would comment on what Professor Kettle said about government and capital each failing regarding the current financial crisis. I believe he said that the government's failure was a failure to regulate, but in my view, government regulation was undermined by Greenspan and others and their anti-government ideology.
All right, well, a couple of broad topics there, but we'll talk about government regulation, as Larry alluded to, Don Kettle.
Yeah, I mean, and I think ultimately it gets to the question of how optimistic we can be about all this, and I really am optimistic. I think on the question of regulation, and we're going to be spending the better part of the next century, and it's going to keep economists busy for a good part of that time, trying to sort out exactly how we got ourselves into this. And it's clear that that Greenspan made capital and made money cheaper than, in retrospect now, seemed prudent. It's also clear that we should have tightened down on the regulatory side much more than we did at the time to make sure that a lot of these fly-by-night loans simply were not given out. That's all pretty clear now in retrospect, I think. The real question is whether or not we're smart enough in advance to be able to avoid some of these problems. I mean, can we really be optimistic about the ability of our country to be able to solve some of these problems? And I really am. And I am in part because of the thing that, in part, Larry said, it was the role of government in recognizing that in launching the Apollo program, the government and NASA didn't actually run the program. It ran the contractors who ran the program, and it was smart enough to figure out how to do that. What we need is a government that figures out how to do that in a much broader sense. It's the application of these rocket science principles much more broadly. And the good news is that there are a lot of people throughout the government who on their own have figured out how to do this. There's actually a former student of mine who is down working for the school system in New Orleans who figured out at a time when FEMA was trying to force everybody into very narrow rules that didn't make much sense for reimbursing the city. For example, if you lost the book My Little Pony in one of the libraries, you had to demonstrate you had in fact purchased a copy of My Little Pony to get a new copy of it. Instead, they said, look, this is crazy, going back and trying to spend a fortune trying to document what was in our card catalog, to get money back, makes no sense to anybody. How about if we demonstrate how much that we had in the libraries? You give us a check, we'll figure out how to go back and replace our libraries. It took a long time, but finally common sense prevailed, and in the end, the library system is being put back together again. It's the ability, bit by bit, with smart people out there trying to figure out ways of making sure that our rules don't trip us up, that in the end succeed in making sure that the government we have is the government that we need. And that's the real challenge that we face now.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Don Kettle, if you do think it is yet another blunder from our government in how the current administration, in transition with the Obama administration, is trying to bail out the financial sector and get us out of this recession.
Well, I mean, we are at a place where we've never been before. We've never bought ourselves a nice insurance company. We may very well end up with ownership stakes in the car companies by the time we're done. We own a piece of Citibank. We have never been here before. And I think that what everybody's trying to do at this point is make sure that by putting money into the economy, we can forestall a deeper economic collapse. I think that's what everybody wants to have happen. What we do not have at this point is a strategy for figuring out how to deal with these problems. And that is what it is that we need. What we need is, I think, a two-part strategy. One is trying to figure out just how best to try to pump the money into the economy to make sure that we don't end up making the situation worse, and in fact, we can make things better for all of us. But then on the other hand, it's going to be doing so in a way that gets us both an ownership stake and some responsibility in trying to steer this economy on the part of government. And that's the capacity we don't have right now. And we're essentially creating new tools of government on the fly. We need to find a way to get very smart, very fast, to be able to do this, or, again, we'll be in serious trouble. It's one thing to pump a lot of money out there in a big hurry. Another thing 6 months from now saying, wait a minute, have we spent our money on what, and how is this working? You saw what happened when the auto company heads flew to Washington private jets. We're going to be in for more and more of those studies and more of those stories unless we find a way to get really smart very fast about managing these new tools that we're creating in the process.
And you are, in our final minute, hopeful that we'll see the changes you're calling for.
I am. I mean, I think that we've proven very smart and very resilient over time. And best of all, I can't tell you, as I was researching this book, how many people throughout the government I talked to who really are trying and inventing new strategies for dealing with these issues. I'm very hopeful based on the people that I've talked to and the efforts that they're making. But we should not underestimate how hard this is and how fundamental the transformation and the changes will have to be. And so our big piece, our fundamental piece, is understanding that we are at this crucial transition point where what we really need is a new government, what I call the next government of the United States. If we're successful in putting that together, we'll be successful as a country. If we don't, then we'll be looking back 20 years from now, ruining the opportunity that we had and the one that we missed.
Got to go. Thank you so much for being with us.
So good to be with you again, Joy.
Don Kettle, author of The Next Government of the United States. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.